Good morning. I'd like to welcome you to the study session on Thursday, February 1st. And we need to excuse the mayor, who is out of town. We have six items on our agenda, including we have three pre-scheduled public appearance. We haven't had three in a long time. This is very exciting. So we'll get to that towards the end of the agenda. But first, we're going to review the items on the agenda for the February 5th regular council meeting. And we have the agenda that was revised on 1:30 of 07 is the one we're operating off of. So if you just look at that with me, page 1, page 2, we have the alcohol liquor licenses and starting contracts. The Caledonian Society was deleted. Are they coming back later, or is that a, they're not? That's a permanent deletion. Okay, thank you. Page 3, we're still on contracts. Councilmember Griswold.
On 4D, on the building the wall in the Beverly Park, I wonder if the police have been consulted on are they in favor of a wall or not on visibility. So that's just a question that needs to be answered today, but if I get that answer.
It's wrought iron.
Part of it's wrought iron, part of it is block. I don't see anybody here from that division, but we'll get it later.
Yeah, I can tell you this is a request of the adjacent neighborhood, neighbor and the neighborhood, that just to keep the movement of people back and forth. And we think it's something we need to do to secure the park up and provide security for the adjacent property owners, too. So.
I think there was an issue with citrus being stolen from their trees and things like that they were concerned about.
Okay. Thank you.
Kyle, did you have something on that you wanted to add?
I said fences don't really stop them. They still come over and get your citrus anyway.
Free having your citrus picked. Page 4, I think 4E is off because it's the mayor has a conflict on that one. Councilmember Griswold.
Just another question. I didn't know if we had any other projects scheduled for water or gas projects before we actually do the sealing on these. I was hoping we're timing these projects so we don't do them and tear them up. I just wondered if we have a schedule for any gas or water on these same street lines.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Griswold, we coordinate all the overlays and reconstructs with utilities through the engineering division to make sure that doesn't happen unless there's an emergency.
All right. My area, I've just seen it a little different in the past, so thank you.
Peter, did you have anything you wanted to add to that? Okay, we're good. Thank you. Anything on page 5? I just wanted to note, page 5, we're starting the introduction of ordinances and setting February 20th, 2007 as the date of the public hearing on the ordinances. You'll note that there is no introduction of an ordinance for Lowe's because that was recommended for denial by planning and zoning. So that means that there is no ordinance being introduced. However, that item will be on the agenda for February 20th. I just don't want anybody to be confused who's looking at our agenda and wondering when that's coming forward. It will come forward for discussion. My understanding is if the council gives direction then an that they wanted to proceed with an ordinance, that then that would have to come back again. Is that right, Mr. Wesley?
Vice Mayor Walters, that is correct. At that time, if council wants us to proceed, we can introduce an ordinance or be introduced then the first meeting in March, and the hearing on that ordinance will be the second meeting in March.
So for the neighbors who are interested, that's still the February 20th meeting when it would be discussed. Anything else on page 5? Page 6, we still have, we're taking action on ordinances at this point. And every one of these went through a hearing officer. This was a different sort of book that we had this go around.
Yes, Vice Mayor, we are making good use of our hearing officer. Speeds up the process on some of the simpler cases. These were all comparable zoning, so they could go there without any difficulty.
What kind of time savings are you getting on that?
Mayor, that's at least 2 weeks because it meets the first Thursday of the month instead of the third Thursday of the month. And then often if they're that simple, we can even process them a little bit faster so they get there quicker.
Good. Okay. Good to hear. Anything else on page 6? Page 7, we're still doing ordinances. And we're starting on the subdivision plats, moving over to page 8. Subdivision plats. Any questions on page 8? All right. Councilmember Whalen.
On 8C, is this the first indication we've had that this apartment complex has changed from apartments to condo?
Councilmember Whalen, I'll have to look and see a little bit more of the history of that and get back on you, you know, if this would be the first indication of that or not.
I know it used to be an apartment complex, and I had word that it was going to change to condo, but virtually all we have is a plat change. Is that all that is necessary?
That's correct. The preliminary plat would have been considered by planning and zoning. That's as far as a preliminary plat goes, so that is, this probably is the only indication you'd have.
Do we have that in our book?
All you really get in your book is a short memo. Okay. You don't really get the history with it, so I can look
at that. I haven't looked at it yet. Okay. Thank you.
And in terms of the law, the state law does really, there aren't really any options here. I mean, we have to go ahead and accept it. It's sort of interesting to me that we even have it on the agenda as if we had an alternative. And I'm not speaking negatively about this project. I'm just saying in general. Ms. Spinner, why do we vote on something when we don't have an option of voting no on it?
Well, they still have to comply with our regulations regarding subdivision plats. So that is what the council is being asked to acknowledge or confirm that they are in compliance with our regulations. I think what you're referring to, Vice Mayor, is a relatively new statute that says we cannot impose additional requirements on a condominium or an apartment complex that is changing to a condominium. And that's not before the council today.
Understood. But the point I'm making is, even with the, we're confirming that it meets with the subdivision plat regulations, staff has confirmed that. So what we're confirming is that we believe that staff believes that. I don't think any one of us actually looks at these and examines them to see whether or not they actually met the subdivision plat regulations.
Vice Mayor, if I may, part of that whole subdivision process is set up through state statute, which does put this requirement on council to approve the plats before they can be filed. And the council is accepting the dedications that are shown on the plat. I think one of the main things that happens.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Anything else on the agenda? Okay, then we're going to move back over to the pink agenda, and we need to acknowledge the receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. I have a motion and a second. Councilmember Griswold.
There is I think inaccuracy I found in going through there, and I believe it's in the utility committee, and I was just sitting as a member, but it mentions more than 70 annexations requests pending. I think I said several, maybe, but I may have misspoke. So I'm just reading the minutes. So if you change that one, I would probably be.
Then I'll amend the motion.
Vice Mayor, we'll make that. We'll look at that and make that change.
Thank you. Can we go ahead and approve the minutes, or should we wait? As amended. All right, we have as amended and this agreed by the seconder. And any further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The voting is unanimous. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Who wants to go first? Scott?
The state has a brand new now Department of Homeland Security. I'm on the coordinating council for that. We'll be looking at grant applications throughout the state for all cities for bolstering our preparedness for homeland defense, fire protection, and police as well. So I'm looking forward to continuing those efforts.
Anybody else? I've got a few. I filled in for the mayor on Friday at the AMWA retreat. They brought everyone together. Chris was there. We had the technical people. Catherine Sorensen was there. We had people from all over the valley who represent the technical side, the management side, and the city councils. And they thought it was effective enough that they want to do that again, having everybody at the table at the same time. On Saturday morning, Kyle and I were at the groundbreaking for the beginning of Line Station. I know some people want to call it the end of Line Station, but the beginning of Line Station at Sycamore. For light rail, and many people don't realize it's a transit hub also for buses. So that was a good activity. And then in the afternoon, Rex and I were at the opening of the Whiteman House for girls at Sunshine Acres, which was one of the nicest events. There's some great events that we get to go to, but I have to tell you, this one was one of the premier events. Jeff Whiteman had organized a group of people to volunteer and donate their time, materials, everything else, and they built a beautiful, beautiful new home for girls out at Sunshine Acres. And then yesterday I represented the mayor at MAG, which if I guess my being there caused the meeting to be about 15 minutes long. It was like an all-time record, shortest meeting, and I'm fine with that. And yesterday morning, I had my transportation coordinating committee that is required by the federal government coordinating human service transportation. And we're working on some initial short-term things that need to happen. One of the biggest problems that we have in transportation coordination in human services or any place else is that a lot of the providers don't know that the other providers are out there. And so one of the things that we're recommending is that in order to receive the federal grants, that they have to sit down with each other, that they have to come to the table so that they know who's doing what, which I think is a really good move forward. I raised the issue that is a huge issue for me, and I don't know where we're going to go with it, but one of the people there said we need to assess all of the needs that we have in the Valley in terms of human service and senior service and special needs transportation and all of those kinds of things. And I said, I guarantee you that if you have that assessment, you are going to have so much more need than you can ever meet. It will be phenomenal. So the question is, how do you take a scarce resource and allocate it in a rational way? And I think one of those things is encouraging more people who can to ride the bus, if that's a possibility for them to ride the bus. But we're looking at all of those things. Anybody else? I beg your pardon? Well, I'm not the chair of the police committee.
I wasn't there.
I beg your pardon.
I was trapped in the mountains with a broken vehicle, so I couldn't get there.
I thought you were going to say with a snowstorm. I beg your pardon. I'll let somebody else report on the police banquet, which was wonderful. Councilmember Jones? Councilmember Griswold?
Well, Kyle and I and the vice mayor were at the banquet
Scott?
At EBIT at Scott's, excuse me. Didn't leave. And he was not stuck in the mountains. For the awards for our police department, the number of lives they've saved this year and civilians has been amazing, and the amount of bravery. It was a very well done event, and our host was Mark Curtis, Channel 12, so it was a very good event.
It was a great event, and I know all of us did a lot of things this week that we didn't report on, but I think we can't tell you everything, but we do a whole lot of things. All right. Moving on to item four, which is scheduling of meetings and general information. What have you got for us, Chris?
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just a reminder to the council, we have a council meeting on Monday, February 5th. We will be starting at 4:15 on Monday, beginning with an executive session at that time. Then Tuesday of next week, February 6th, we have our District 5 town meeting at Shepherd Junior High School. And that'll start at 6:00. And then again, we'll have another study session on Thursday, February 8th at 7:30 a.m. This also a reminder, during the month of February, our second council meeting in that month will not be on a Monday because of the holiday, but will be on Tuesday, February 20th, which also happens to be the evening of the Mesa Man and Woman of the Year banquet. So. Which is also the Lowe's item on the agenda, but we'll try to work with council and see what we can do to manage our time that evening.
Oh my goodness.
And
you know, we can continue that Lowe's meeting one more week.
I think we've already advertised it.
Oh goodness.
So
that, you know, this is the second, at least the second year in a row that that this has been a conflict. If we could look ahead to next year, I know it's important to the Man and Woman of the Year event. They want the council members to be there, and we want to be there to support. These are people who have given so much to the city of Mesa. If you could all look at that and see if there's anything we can do to address this, Chris, in this year.
I think that holiday, and I guess not knowing, we need to get a better idea of when they, I don't know what date they use every year, the same date. We'll have to confirm with them on that. Because I think I can't remember if last year it was a Monday and then we just hit the same time or what. But we'll work with them on that, and we'll work on the agenda to try to keep it somewhat light that night also. Also, just general information for the council. I believe it was around 18 applications were received for the city auditor position. We've done a review of the applications, we believe there are five that are most qualified to be considered. What is being recommended, I think what we've recommended in the past, and just to review that again with council, is that we'll have a panel made up of senior executive staff from the city manager's office, assistant city manager, deputy city manager. We'd also like to get someone from in the private sector, CPA, to sit on a panel that then would interview those five candidates and then bring to the council a finalist group of probably two or three, maybe two, maybe three, just trying to see the strongest candidates and bring that to council for you to interview. So that's the proposal, and let us know if there's, you know, any concerns or want to do something different, but that's where we are at this time.
And that was the proposal that had come out of the Finance and Audit Committee that we all heard a while ago. If you have concerns with that process that Chris just described, you need to make that known so that we can, because as you all recall, this is now a council-hired position. So if you have a concern with that process, please let me know, or when the mayor gets back, let him know. Okay. Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you. We have three pre-scheduled public appearances. First, we're going to hear from Danny Friedman, who's a field representative from Congressman Harry Mitchell's office. I don't see Mr. Friedman. You know, we're going so fast this morning, people probably anticipated that they could wait a little bit longer. So if he comes in at the end, we'll add him on at the end. Doris Ramos, regarding the traffic noise at the southwest corner of McKellips and Val Vista. Mrs. Ramos, if you would come up, please, and we'll give you 3 minutes. Now, I have a question for the city attorney. Don't start her time yet, because I have a question. Since this is posted with what it's about, this is a little different than what we usually have, which is somebody coming up. We don't have notice of what they're going to be speaking about. Can the council comment on things that she says without taking action?
Yes, Vice Mayor, you can comment because we did identify the issue to be discussed, so it does give council more flexibility than someone that just comes up under items from citizens present. If council wants an in-depth discussion and maybe some additional work from staff, obviously we would put it on the agenda for a future council meeting, but you can comment generally with regard to the comments made by the speaker.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning. Thank you for the opportunity of bringing to you a problem that lately has been the main topic in our homeowners at our homeowners association meeting. I live on the southwest corner of McKellips and Val Vista in a community called the Arboleda. Our properties. My property backs up into McKellips, and the traffic noise sometimes it's just intolerable, particularly Friday nights. I mean, up into the late hours into the morning. A major added problem now is crime. Malicious intruders jumping over our perimeter walls into our backyards, incidences of attempted burglaries, theft, auto theft, God knows what else they intend to do. I particularly, someone tried to pry my bedroom window open. So these are the problems that we're confronting in our great community. I guess that our builder didn't anticipate back in 1999 that the growth and, you know, the traffic and the congestion and that these issues that we're facing now would be anticipated. I noticed our wall is only 6 feet tall. Our perimeter wall is only 6 feet tall and it facing McKellips and Val Vista. And I noticed that on Gilbert, going west, the city has erected an 8-foot wall, I guess a sound barrier wall that was built years ago when you did the street improvements project, expanding McKellips and preparing it for the 202. I'm bring forth to the council that you explore the possibility, perhaps, that in, I know that the Department of Transportation is preparing to propose to you a street improvements project for the intersection of McKellips and Val Vista, and I believe Greenfield and Val Vista, and Higley and Val Vista. In that project, I understand from the employees, the staff at Department of Transportation, that you are well aware of the growth, the traffic, and the traffic nuisance, the noise and all that, and that you are looking to improve, appease the noise with rubberized asphalt and some other things that I was told that will improve the traffic flow. I'm here to ask the council to please consider the possibility of including a sound barrier wall for us, for our community.
Mrs. Ramos?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. Your 3 minutes is up. If you could just wrap up.
Okay. Thank you. I ask that you consider a wall for us to alleviate some of the problems that I've just mentioned. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jack, can you give us some information on this?
Sure, Vice Mayor, Council. Mrs. Ramos is right. It is on our radar screen to improve the intersections of McKellips from Gilbert to Power. I don't think we have a time frame for that yet, but a couple of things. I believe that southwest section is probably already improved to where the curb line is going to stay, I think. I'm not sure. But one of the things that would mitigate sound would be mitigating congestion. And if there's any way that the improvement to the intersection would allow traffic to flow with less congestion, probably the sound would decrease. The 8-foot wall on Gilbert, of course, was an improvement that we did when we came back later and actually widened Gilbert Road and put those sound walls up. We can certainly look at it. We'll put it as an issue when we study the intersection improvements. But typically, if the and I think in this case, I think we looked ahead when the developer put the walls up, and I think that's where the walls are going to stay. I don't think we're going to move the walls, and you know, we can look into it further. And the odds are that a 6-foot wall probably doesn't have the specifications, the rebar in it to be able to raise it a couple of feet. But again, we'll look at that, and anything we can do to try to minimize, whether it be a little bit of landscaping that might buffer sound, things like that, we'll put that on our radar screen. And if we could, Dan Clevenger is here, and we'll get Mrs. Ramos's contact phone number and work with her.
Okay, and I think that there were some other issues there that were crime issues that she was talking about. I don't know if we've had the crime specialists from the police department, the people who work in your neighborhood, out there. Arboleda is a lovely gated community, but as you noted, people can come over the fence. So, and rubberized asphalt.
Absolutely.
When we redo
Yes.
the street there.
Yes.
Because that really does help mitigate noise.
And just not to create any expectations that may not prevail when it's finished, my expert, Peter Knutson, indicates really rubberized asphalt has the most impact at high speeds. There may be some minimal impact on these intersections, but typically on the freeways where we've done, with ADOT's done that, we've had a great reduction in sound.
People are going about 55 miles an hour past that subdivision, so I would argue that that's a fairly high rate of speed. Councilmember Whalen.
Mr. Ramos, have you had any contact with the police department in reference to crime prevention or block watch people?
I myself, no.
Ms.
No.
Brady, would we work it out that we can get that done?
I made a note to have the police department, someone from crime prevention to call Ms. Ramos to visit about that. Some
give them ideas about some things they can do internally.
And then my second question, would a variance be in order for the homeowners association to erect a higher wall if we cannot do it? It's not necessary.
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Whelan, we'll look into it. I don't think that would be an issue, but we'll look into it. And again, anything we can do to work with the neighborhood, we will.
On an arterial street, would you need a variance for an 8-foot wall?
I'm not sure. I don't think so, but we'll look into it.
We'll find out about that for you as well. A variance would have to go to Board of Adjustments, but if it's in the code, then it could just be done. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. We sure appreciate it. Next, we will hear from Steve Collins regarding the new fire inspection fees. Mr. Collins.
Hi, City Council and Vice Mayor. Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. I own four group homes in Mesa. These are people that are getting out of prison, recovering from addiction and alcoholism. And the other day, I actually found out about this fee in Prescott at a meeting up there. But I did receive the letter in the mail from the fire department about new fees that they are going to impose. So I looked at the council minutes for January and December, found that the ordinance was proposed in December and passed in January. And I then looked at the rules for passing an ordinance, and it indicates that there's supposed to be a public hearing. I was never notified of any public hearing, and since I'm a stakeholder in this, I feel like I should have been. Now, the ordinance itself, as far as the fire department charging a fee, is not the question. It's the amount of the fees and the way they are determining the severability of the fees. So I don't expect these questions to be answered, but one question I have is who controls those fees? Since the council just passed an ordinance, they did not pass the fee schedule that I could see. I'd like to know who controls those fees. We need to talk to those people. The old fees, I don't know if the council was aware, it by passing this ordinance, it infers that in the past that fire department was not permitted to charge fees. And they did charge a fee before. It's $50. Now, on group homes, they're proposing a $250 fee. That's 500%. That's a heck of a charge. The other problem that I have is they're also charging, in addition to that, a $15 fee to collect data from us and a questionnaire, of which they said the questionnaire was included, but it wasn't. So that's neither here nor there. What my proposal would be is that council and IT information systems look at having this information on a website. Let us update our information like most other businesses do today. Set up a secured website so we can go in, log in, update our information. The fire department doesn't have to pass out and spend the city's money to print a questionnaire, and then we don't have to spend money in postage to send it back and forth. Just log on and do it. Also, today, when they collect that $50 fee, we have to go down to City Hall and pay the fee, then have a receipt. We should go on and step into the 2000s and part of the secured website, let us pay the fee online. Why should we have to come down here? And then the fire department has all the information. We paid the fee. Everything is there. They can even schedule our inspections. I would suggest that someone look at the fee structure. I'm going to wrap it up real quick. We're group homes of 10 people or less, so I'm going to suggest that we be classified on the group homes of 10 or less, classified in lower class instead of the high risk.
Okay, I need to cut you off.
Yeah.
Because your time is up, but we can get your information so someone with fire can talk to you about it, but we can answer some of those questions this morning. So let's answer the ones that we can. First of all, Ms. Spinner, would you talk about the public hearing piece of this?
Yes, Vice Mayor. Under Section 211B of our charter, it sets out the process for introduction and adoption of ordinances, and it states that after introduction of the ordinance, the city must post in a public meeting notice and agendas, and shall publish at least one time a summary of the ordinance together with a notice setting out the time and place of the public hearing for the consideration by the council. In a further provision, subsection D of that same section in the ordinance, it defines publish, and it states that the term publish means to print at least one time in one or more newspapers of general circulation. So we are not required by our charter or by state law to notify the individual people that may be impacted by an ordinance that the council is committed or considering. It requires that we publish in a newspaper the ordinances that the council will consider. And to the best of my knowledge, although I don't know specifically with regard to this ordinance, to the best of my knowledge, we did comply with that requirement. So in terms of the consideration of the introduction and the adoption by the council, we have complied with all the requirements of the charter.
One of the challenges would be to determine how any ordinance that we were passing, to determine all of the potential impacts, all of the people we could potentially impact, which is why the rationale on doing a general publication as opposed to going out and identifying every specific individual. Now, I know if we have a zoning thing, we notify people within 300 feet. I mean, there are some regulations like that where we know that there's a specific direct impact. But general impact, this actually impacted businesses all over the city, not just your particular business, but all businesses in the city. I'm going to call on Rex Griswold, who is the fire chair, to talk about it for a second.
A little bit on the process came before the fire committee and looking at it. And one of the goals was we realized we were getting further and further behind in inspections. We weren't inspecting high-risk businesses and explosives and chemicals, etc. So with our budget for all the residents to subsidize all the businesses didn't seem to be a fair one. So if you get a service, you pay for the service. So the people that get the inspections for high-risk ones pay what it costs us to spend 2 days there or whatever it does. The people at medium risk pay for what the... The other one is we didn't have a list of even all the businesses in town. So if somebody moves in next to you with a nail studio with acetone in there, you wouldn't even know. If we have a fire at night, we don't have a cell phone number to call somebody and say, your building's on fire. So the $15 was to get know what businesses are, what business you're in this year, and have a number of the owners so we can contact you if there's a problem. So that was the $15 just, and that's not really inspection. We're not even going to try. 90% of the businesses where we don't even get to inspect. The ones in the risk and medium risk and high risk. I think you're in the medium risk.
No, they've classified group homes as in a high risk, which high is risk. Absolutely ludicrous.
Okay. Based on the code.
And so based on the code, it's based on the code, not the city and fire. But looking at the cost, so the fees were set by the fire department, what it would cost them to do. So we can go back and look at those, but that's what the system came through. And that the residents don't subsidize businesses and their fire departments used and not doing what they're supposed to do, whether it's spending times at different operations. So that was the theory. I'm not sure it's actually perfectly. But I think you're absolutely right on paying online and modern technology. We need to get there as fast as possible and not take your time out of your busy day that you can just pay online. So,
Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. And just as a note, too, that the fees that are being charged here at Mesa are not atypical of the Valley. As a matter of fact, Mesa's fire department had not charged fees for fire prevention inspections for quite some time. A survey was done of other Valley communities to see the types of fees that were being charged there, and the fee schedule that was adopted is in line, one, with cost recovery for the amount of money that we have to pay out for those inspections, and two, that they meet at least the median level of fees being charged throughout the Valley. So if your operation was in another city, you'd be seeing similar fees there as well.
In terms of the online payment of bills, I don't know, Chris, where we are on that, but that's one that we're always struggling with the technology and staying up to date. Are you aware of what's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, certainly this is an area throughout the whole city where we're trying to get automation online, and we want to make it convenient for our customers to be able to access that and provide us information. But even technology costs money. And so, but that is something that we've actually challenged all the departments to this budget cycle, is to look at opportunities instead of adding people, but how can we use technology to be, make what the staff we have more efficient, as well as to make things easier for our customers. So you'll see a whole array of opportunities that we're going to talk about as far as technology improvements. And certainly we can look into this one also. Again, it's just there's a whole variety of technology improvements, but this is certainly a great idea that we can look into.
And Mr. Collins indicated that he needed to come down to City Hall to pay. Does the option not exist to mail this in?
You know, I'm going to have to ask
Chief someone, Beck
or someone, yeah, fire.
Somebody from fire. Chief Puckett.
Vice Mayor, Council, yes, the option does exist, and that's what we certainly encourage, is for them to mail it in. We have a self-addressed envelope that's included, and they mail it back into the city for their payment.
And I seem to recall that there was an issue, you know, with any time you have a group home, you may have people who are ambulatory, people who are not ambulatory. I seem to recall that that was a point of discussion at the time that we were doing this.
Yeah, and let me address that. Mr. Collins is right. The homes that he owns do fall into the high-risk category, and our rationale for that, as you remember, when we gave the presentation to council on the entire program, we talked about low, medium, and high-risk occupancies. One of the things that council requested from us was give us a definition, and we did that, and we talked about it. Those definitions were based on a few things. One was material stored, processes that take place at the facility, the type of occupancy that is there in terms of numbers and the individuals that are in there. So the rationale behind the group homes being in the high-risk category was the fact that they do have individuals in there that have existing medical conditions that we were concerned about that may not be fully capable of getting out of the home in case of an emergency. In addition to that, you have people that come into the home and then hopefully eventually leave the home, and they come and go and may not be as familiar with their surroundings as a typical residential home. So that's kind of the rationale with the high-risk category for Mr. Collins' homes.
It's also a little bit difficult because of the transient nature of the occupancy. It's a little difficult to assess, whereas in 1 week you may have everybody who's in ambulatory state. The next week, that may no longer be true.
That's correct.
So, Mr. Collins, did you want to?
I have a comment.
I'll give you 30 seconds here.
Okay, I have a comment on that. When we got our license, we agreed we would have ambulatory people only in our homes. If we have non-ambulatory people, we have to have fire sprinklers. And so that's one of the criteria of our homes. And you go on my website and find it and see that we do not take non-ambulatory people at all. And there's only 10 people, and plus the fire inspection takes 20 minutes. That's a tops, not days.
And that's, let me clarify Councilmember Griswold's point. When it's a high risk, lots of chemicals, that kind of occupancy, those are the kind that can take days. We're not talking about your particular, the reason you fall into that high risk category is for a different reason. And I think it's because of what Chief Puckett just outlined. We will continue to look at this. This is our first year of doing this, and so this is an evolving thing. We appreciate your input in it. I think that there was one other issue that was raised there. Who controls the fees? The council sets the fees. We don't set them. Do we set them by ordinance? My recollection is that we don't.
It depends. Some originated through ordinance, and under our charter, to amend an ordinance, it has to be by an ordinance. Others originated through resolution, and they come before the council as a resolution.
And this one was one that came through as a resolution?
I guess I would turn to Chief Puckett.
Yes, an ordinance supporting the permit and the resolution supporting the actual fee.
So what happens is that the Finance and Audit Committee looks at these fees on an annual basis. We tend to look at our fees and see if they're still appropriate. Do we need to modify something? Then we bring it back to the council with a recommendation, and the council acts on that. Councilmember Rawls.
Just to let you know, that particular setting of that fee and the process was probably, I think, the most laborious one that we've engaged in since I've been on the council. We went through three or four different versions. We continually tried to massage it, refine it, reduce it, get it down to where it just covered the cost overall. Now we can't individualize each business that falls into each category and say, okay, you're going to pay $1.47, you're going to pay $3.12. We had to pick some numbers, but this council struggled mightily with that process to try to make it as fair and equitable as we could.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come here today.
Which council member handles the code compliance?
Code compliance is done through staff, and if you have a specific issue, who would like to talk to him about his issue on code compliance? Who's going to handle it? Rod Ross has his hand up back here. Rod, stand up so he knows who to come to talk to. There you go. If you go talk to that gentleman, he'll help you with your issue there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Okay.
I didn't see Mr. Friedman come in, so we will assume that he'll come another time. And items from citizens present, or were there any requests to speak?
Yes, Vice Mayor. We're going to hear from Brenda Capizzi.
Good morning. My name is Brenda Capizzi, and I, too, am a director of recovery homes in the Mesa area. I've complied with all your licensing requirements, and also in order to maintain my license, I have to pay fire inspection fees. And I received a letter also dated January 19th, and informing me you're raising my fire inspection fees from $50 to $250 per year. You know, that's a 500% increase. I want you to know that I don't understand why you classify 10 people living in a five-bedroom home as high risk. I kind of did get my answer a little bit. You've classified us with large assemblies, woodworking, spray finishing, semiconductor manufacturing, hospitals, facilities with high piled storage and high-rise structures. I, too, do not accept any non-ambulatory people in my facilities. You know, I provide a service for my community, for my state, and especially men trying to start their lives over again. I help the homeless, parolees, probationers, and the addicted. I open my homes to those with or without food, clothing, money. I help them clean up, gain employment, food, and clothing so they can become responsible, productive, tax-paying citizens. Most of these residents start their employment at day labor establishments. You know, the wages are minimal, and the work is labor-intensive. I would hate to pass this cost on to them. I don't receive any federal or state assistance. The monies I rely upon come slowly from the residents paying their program fees. Needless to say, not all residents pay their program fees before they leave. Consequently, this massive increase of fire inspection fees will cause me quite a business hardship. I'm asking you to reconsider assessing group homes with licenses for 10 or less residents a medium or low risk status, making the fire and licensing fees more manageable while allowing us to keep our standard of excellence. Thank you.
Thank you. We could speak on the last one, which we did. I don't think that, because this is, that's interesting because she's talking on exactly the same thing, but I think that we've addressed the issues that were there, and we'll continue to discuss our fees and look at them and make sure that they're appropriate. Councilmember Whalen.
Just a question on fees. When would we look at the fees again the next time, or would we have to bring any fee changes to a council study session?
Councilmember Whalen, the fees will remain in place until staff brings it forward for some type of change. If staff is recommending a change in the fees, typically they review the fees every year and decide whether they're going to come forward to council. Certainly, if council gives staff direction that council would like to take a look at these fees, it can be brought forward in that manner as well.
And I think that we had given some direction that these, because we were in our first year, that after we had gone through a cycle with these fees, that they were coming back to the finance
right.
and audit committee
remember,
to assess.
All we've done right now is we've just started the process with the letter going out, so we even haven't even had a full month yet, I don't think, a full month of the collection. So we're just starting. What's happening is the letters are getting out. We wanted to notify people that the fee was going to be assessed. We haven't even been able to ramp up with the hiring of inspectors or any part of the program, really, at this point. This is very much at its infancy. I would really suggest it'll probably be until not this budget cycle, probably be the next budget cycle before we can come back and say, here's what the experience has been and here's what we've been able to perform.
But should we choose to, at the committee level, we possibly could bring the
absolutely.
Fee structure
absolutely.
Back?
Absolutely. Yes.
Councilmember Rawls.
And would it also be possible for us to revisit the categorizations? Because I really think that's the nature of the complaint, not so much the fee, it's what gets involved in the fee. So is that something that we can bring back to the committee at an earlier stage?
You can, Councilman Barraza.
And just as a reminder for all of us, that this is an issue of cost recovery of costs to the city. I mean, we've, as Tom pointed out, we went through a very laborious process on this, probably, you know, more intense than I can recall. The fire committee had it, the finance and audit committee had it. We then went over it as a council, and while there may be some tweaking, I think we all need to recognize that when people get a fee for the first time or see an increase like this that actually reflects the cost recovery, that it isn't a happy thing for any of us when we get increased fees. I don't know about you, but I don't like it. Is there anything else from council? All right, then seeing no other action here, we'll adjourn the meeting. Thank you.